The Off The Ball Podcast Network.
Now, I'm delighted to say we have Brendan Maher here in studio. He's busy at the moment. He's got a first Munster final upcoming this weekend, the AIB Munster final this Sunday with Barisalie. They play Ballygunner after winning the first ever county championship in their history, I think I'm right in saying.
33 years.
33 years. Several generations, we'll say.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Brendan, as I'm sure you know, has two All-Ireland minor medals in his back pocket. He was captain for one of those years. He has an under-21 All-Ireland medal in his back pocket. That same year, he won the first of his three senior All-Irelands, and there are three All-Stars thrown in there as well. So that's a Rolls-Royce career. That sounds like smooth sailing. Easy.
Yeah. It sounds better than it was, I think.
Well, that's
all the stuff in between.
Always the way. Yeah. So, Barisalie, they've won their first county title in 33 years. That's a big deal. I presume the place lost its rag for a couple of days?
Did, absolutely, yeah. For 2 to 3 days, approximately.
Wasn't a cow milked and all that business?
Yeah, all the usual malarkey. We have three farmers, or four farmers, I think, possibly more on the panel. So, they didn't go near the milking powder for a few days, but... No, it was great. There is actually quite a proud kind of big history in the club. So we won an All-Ireland title. We're the last tip team actually to win a club All-Ireland back in 87, and 86 was the last time we won the county, and had six county finals before that. So quite a kind of big history, but nothing since the 80s. So there was
Why
a big
was
gap.
That? What happened?
Because we weren't good enough, I suppose. No, look, I mean, we had great teams in the 80s, and then the 90s just didn't seem to follow up, and a couple of strong teams came along in Tumi Vera, dominated for 9-10 years, and then Turles Sarsfields came along and dominated. And the last couple of years we've had new winners, but I mean, up to that it was Turles all the time. So look, it's great. Look, the celebrations are unbelievable. And we had a quick turnaround then. We had to play Glen Rovers and 7 days later, so it was beering for 2 or 3 days, and then it was back to
detox.
We trained on the Wednesday night. We trained and sweated out whatever badness was in us, and knuckled down again, and thankfully got a win, so it was great.
Barisalie, is it a big village, small village, town?
Yeah, you had it right there, big village, small town kind of a setup. We're on the main road between Thurles and Nina, so quite a kind of a busy pass through town, and also link Templemore, Thurles and Nina is kind of like the midway point there. So we get a big passing trade, I suppose, in terms of the public houses and the shops and that, but population-wise, we're around 2,000, I think, around that. So
small enough. Everyone knows everyone. Small.
Exactly, yeah, very tight-knit community, and but a lot going on at the same time, you know, so it's a great place.
And are you farming background, or what's your story?
My mother would come from a farming background, but my father has a haulage business, so grew up in the yard at home, and under trucks and trying to drive trucks, and still do a bit of it whenever I can to help out. Yeah, just...
Now, answer this truthfully. When did you first drive a truck across the yard?
I think the deal was, right, so my father made a deal with me that if I washed the truck, I could drive it.
And you were 6 years old?
And 10, I think, was the first time I got in behind the wheel. And that started from there. So every day I came home from school, it was like, get the homework done. And like, if there was a truck out there, it was getting washed, and I was going to get to drive it.
And how far do you get to drive it?
Just around the yard, but it was quite a big yard. Well, it felt like a big yard at the time, felt huge at the time, but so needless to say, now my truck washing days are well behind me. But I still do a bit of driving. I have the license and all that, so
yeah.
My degree is teaching, so I have the summers off, so I try and.
So would you do it for your dad?
Yeah. So I drive like a tipper truck. The local quarry is Kelly's of Fantan, so basically local work, doing tarmac, say roads, houses, that kind of work.
So you wouldn't be doing long haul driving or anything?
No, I don't go near any of that. No, it wouldn't suit really, would it?
Okay. And how was business for your dad growing up?
It was good and then bad, obviously, like anyone. I mean, when the recession hit, like haulage businesses were hit hard between insurance and the cost of fuel then was the big one. So it did well to come through it, and hopefully now out the worst side of it, you know, and doing well, busy, up and down, like every business. Mm. Like we're a small business, like we've 16 trucks on the road.
Okay.
You know, so my oldest brother, Sean, is running it now along with my father. So there's never a dull moment. It's a tough business,
I would think so.
Yeah, like, I mean, you'd very rarely not see the lights in the shed on when you go out at home in the evening time. And my father's 64 years of age now, and you'll find him in the shed. If you want to find him, that's where you go. And very hard worker. And Sean now is similar, following on. Like, the hours they put in is just unbelievable.
And were you tempted to go into that line of business?
I wanted to when I was younger, yeah, and was always warned to not go near it. So Sean was the oldest of us, and he got in there, and he kind of had his heart set on getting involved in the business. And there was there's four of us in total, four boys.
Right.
Declan and Martin went, kind of dipped in and out of it, but didn't decide to go near it. And I wanted to, but I was warned to not go near it because it was too tough of a business to get involved in. And
yeah.
I still am involved. It was in some way I try and help out as much as possible and have the license. And it's great to be able to kind of dip in and out. And I enjoy it. It was very much like a warning, like, no, don't go near this business. It's too tough.
I'd imagine so. And were you and the other brothers all playing hurling nonstop as well?
Yeah. So there's a gap between the three lads are 2 and 3 years apart in terms of age. And then there's 7 years to me. So... an admitted mistake. Surprise.
There's a lot of people who make it big in sport, though, who are the youngest in their family.
Is there?
And they get the crap kicked out of them, and they have to learn how to handle themselves.
But that definitely happened to me, yeah. Yeah, I was. There was lots of tears shed when I was growing up. I used to want to play with the lads, so we've two cousins of ours, Seamus and Philip, live literally in the house up field behind us.
Right.
And they were down, so it was the five lads out in the yard every evening playing. And of course, the little young lad wanted to play with them. And
they stick you in goals?
They weren't letting me play, first of all,
because
I'd be too much of a hindrance on the game. But they make a joke like that. It wasn't long when I was started to running rings around them out there. But
is that your memory?
Did you realise
pretty early? I'm kind of better than my older brother here.
No, I didn't. I always looked up to him and still look up to him. Mm-hmm. They all hurled county minor and under 21 with Tip, and Martin actually played senior with Tip for a few years and had to pull away with bad knee injuries.
Right. So there was talent in the
family. And Philip, my cousin, hurled full back, won an All Ireland with Tip in 2001.
Yeah.
So I was kind of always looking up to them. And
yeah, fair enough.
I suppose as I got older, I started playing with them, and that was probably when I started to realise, like, maybe I'm doing things that they didn't do, and, you know, start winning minor and 21 and
captain
progressing on.
Yeah.
But I'd never see myself as above them or anything like that. They're still your older brothers, and you still look up to them.
They'll knock you down to size. Yeah. This is the problem, actually, with Tipperary. There's about 6 trillion Mahers.
Yeah.
And I don't know which. Are you related or not? I don't know.
So Pádraig and Ronan are brothers.
Mm.
But outside of that, Bonner, Donna, Paul Maher, sub goalie. And myself, and no family are related to each other. Like,
right.
Maybe somewhere down the line, but not that we know of.
Yeah.
But like, I'm always mixed up as being Pádraig's brother or Ronan's brother and Bonner's, and like,
that's a nightmare.
Yeah. I've told you once now, you should remember.
For about a year, I just could not for the life of me remember. Does Bonner play in the half forward line or the half back line?
Half forward line, yeah.
No. It just takes a long time to get it into your head.
Yeah.
Okay, so not all related. And so, what did you do career wise then?
Primary school teacher. So been teaching since 2009. I came out, I was only 20.
Yeah.
So it was a short course in Mary. It's only 3 years. And I was actually only 17 doing my leaving. So I ended up like in college, 18, 19, 20. I was qualified at 20.
Yeah.
I probably should have been only starting college. So teaching away, and then I went off and did a qualification in strength and conditioning in 2014. So I've just opened a gym down in Bursley. So a small gym, but we're operating out there now since the start of October.
Good man.
How do you
raise the money to do something like that?
I sure just use a bit of saving, and like, it was in the pipeline for a while. Kind of the building, it was a GA club, or kind of town park and GA club combined, were doing this building, and it started back in 2015. So it was in the pipeline quite a while, so I knew it was coming, so I was well prepared and ready to go. And kind of happened, we thought we were going to be up in operation kind of the start of this year, but delays with the final phase of the building, which is always happens with a big build, meant we didn't open up until the start of October. But fully going now and good and busy, and there's a great buzz
decent.
Around. Yeah, it's been good. Yeah, it's nice little buzz around the place, because we had nowhere, we didn't really have a facility like that. So people were travelling into Turles or into Nina to use a gym. So it's nice to be able to provide something for the locals.
Good luck with it.
Thanks, William.
And have you been around Bursley then your whole life?
I have, yeah. Like, I've lived in Limerick, obviously, through my college years, and I was teaching in Bord Hill for a year, so I actually lived in Limerick. Mm. Myself and Shane McGrath shared a house in Limerick for a year, but outside of that, I've been Bursley all the time.
Right.
So yeah, quite a home board.
Yeah. Happy with that, or is there?
I am. Yeah.
Like, I mean, there somewhere.
We're lucky enough in that it's an hour and 45 minutes or an hour and 50 minutes up to Dublin, so it's not too bad.
Okay.
And you have motorway, and it's only an hour and 20 down to Cork, so you're kind of quite central. We're into Limerick, 45-50 minutes, so you're kind of in the middle of everything. So
it doesn't feel isolated.
It doesn't. Yeah, we don't feel too isolated. We're not that backward.
You've seen mobile phone.
Electricity and all this kind of stuff.
Interesting job at the moment, being a primary school teacher. I was listening to the principal of a secondary school giving a speech recently. It was just at an event. And he said something which kind of blew my mind. And he said, the first years coming in to school today, 50% of them will do jobs that do not exist yet. And he said, all of them will have, on average, about 7 or 8 different careers across their life.
Yeah.
Which is not our generation really just yet. I mean, maybe some of us, but I mean, you'll be a teacher probably most of your life.
Yeah, I think I'm nearly the start of it, or my generation is nearly the start of that.
Yeah.
Because I've kind of done it, like, so I've done work outside of teaching as well, and PR and that kind of, like, dipping in and out of things and trying new things. And it seems to be what people are doing now, that you could have like 2 or 3 jobs on the go.
Yeah.
So I have 2 on the go now at the moment, and I feel I'm comfortable with that, you know. Whereas I think, like, traditionally it was like, get your safe, secure job and stick to it. Whether you like it or not,
don't
stick
give it
with
up.
It. Yeah.
Don't worry about your soul.
Yeah,
save
yeah.
your existential yeah. angst. You're doing the job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, and geez, that was definitely our parents' generation.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
How
yeah.
does the experience of a primary school student today differ from what probably was our experience? I'm 34. You're 30.
I'm 30. Yeah. The biggest change, I think, is social media, online stuff.
Right.
Call it cyberbullying, whatever you want. You know, Snapchat and all of this is just.
In primary
stuff.
School?
Yeah.
Do they all
yeah.
have phones?
See, they start to get them kind of from around 4th class, 5th class, they start to get their mobile phones in, and that's when you start to see. You don't actually see it, which is the hard part about it, because it happens outside of school hours and you're not aware of it until something really bad happens, and next thing you become aware of that it was ongoing for the last couple of months. And I'm not saying that happens in our school. We have a great school.
Sure.
Rural school in Lochmore, but it is evident across the board in primary schools. It's becoming more evident, like, of just, you know, I suppose you always had bullies in school, and you always had people that were domineering characters, whatever way you want to describe them.
And actually, sorry to interrupt, I think in our day there was even less of a clampdown on bullying than there would be now.
It was.
Now schools are very good now. But
yeah.
In our day, bullies were kind of still part of the scene, I would have said.
Absolutely, yeah. And you kind of just had to deal with it yourself and get on with it, kind of thing. And maybe there is an element of that needs to be there today as well. But
as in,
you didn't, as in, like, toughen them up a little bit, yeah. But in saying that, you didn't have the online stuff. And the online stuff is lethal.
Is it?
You know, and it's like keyboard warriors. Like, you can say really mean things from your phone or from your keyboard that you wouldn't dare say to a person's face, you know, and that's the danger of it, and that's the risk you have. And
so something blows up and you find out, geez, this poor kid's been having a horrible time for months on end.
It's like, I mean, it's very hard to prevent it, but, like, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to encourage a kind of an open door policy, if you like, in the school, where if a child has a problem, that they'll come to you with it,
right,
so that you can do something about it. The worst case is when the child says nothing and lets it go until something bad happens, and that's maybe more evident in secondary school, but it seems to be kind of coming back into the latter years of primary school children now.
Yeah. And would there be many kids who just wouldn't be allowed a phone at that age still?
There is, yeah, and certainly where I'm teaching, it's a rural school, like, you do have that kind of old school approach, if you want to call it, but it's probably more so in the urban kind of areas that you'll have, they'll probably all have it from 3rd or 4th class up, they'll all have phones.
And is the syllabus different? Is Anne and Barry still going?
No, it's not.
Those
days are gone. Yeah, it's starting to change a little bit. The curriculum is still the same, but it's, yeah, there's a lot more of an emphasis on, I suppose the biggest changes are, like, there's new programmes within literacy and numeracy, and there's big changes going on in the English language curriculum.
Mm.
But, you know, they've a little additions around well-being and mindfulness and that kind of stuff.
Really, is
like no more than the way it's coming into workplace.
Mm.
It's kind of being introduced now at a primary school as well.
A bit of meditation.
It's
or
true. Yeah, we do meditation every day in school.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you lead. Like, you take a few.
I don't lead it now. We have, like, we turn on a little bit of music or whatever it is, and it's nice. It's actually, I find it good as well, just to switch off for a few minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the most basic form of it, and then. It's true, SPHE, it's social, personal, health education. That's kind of the programmes where you'd roll out your mindfulness or well-being stuff, and get kids kind of being more aware of their emotions and that kind of stuff.
Okay, that is different from our day.
Yeah, yeah, usually I'd say like you wouldn't have had any awareness at all. The self-awareness would have been rock bottom, I think, for our generation.
I would have thought so. So where does winning All-Ireland with Tipperary fit into all this? You know, because we get a trail of GAA players in here and you get all ends of the spectrum. I've had inter-county players saying, I don't even have a job. I'm just a full-time GAA athlete.
Yeah.
It defines me. I have an unhealthy obsession.
Yeah.
And then you like have someone, I presume it's the case, you look at a Jack McCaffrey type.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, will take a year off and give up an All-Ireland to go travelling and
yeah.
walks around the parade smiling and is a doctor and doing very well and kind of talks about the love he has for his teammates.
Yeah.
And seems to have a nice balance.
Yeah.
Where are you on this whole spectrum?
I think I'm a lot better now in my latter years. I would say I was probably in that bubble in my early years where I was teaching and I had a lot going on off the pitch, but I was completely in a bubble of like nothing really mattered more than hurling.
Is that why you went into teaching?
No, I wasn't one of those guys who chose teaching because it was going to suit hurling. Like, I was in teaching before. I was barely hurling minor when I started teaching. Like, I said, started my degree. So, no, I wasn't. I didn't make the decision based off that. Obviously, it is accommodating in terms of the time off in the summer and that, but it wouldn't have affected my decision. I'd say I started to change kind of maybe from the age of 25, 26. I started working in an ASD unit in Lochmore and still currently work there.
So
working with so children with autism.
Right.
That would have changed my outlook on things because you see the different challenges that families are going through and changed my outlook on life in general, I suppose.
Did it really?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Like, what made you go in there?
I would have taken an awful lot of things for granted maybe that you see the struggles that people are facing day to day. And because I was in that bubble, all I was thinking, I was getting up, I was thinking about training, playing the matches, and that was your life, like, and everything else was, you hadn't a clue what was going on outside of that.
Okay.
So that kind of brought you back to earth and
was there any reason you started getting involved with that unit?
It was something that just came up as an opportunity from the principal. We were setting up a new unit and I was given the opportunity to set it up and I said, why not? I just kind of liked the idea of the challenge and liked the idea of working. I had worked in what we'd call resource teaching, it's now SET, but basically working with children with special needs or with learning difficulties, and I had really enjoyed that, so I thought, this is something I'd like to get into.
So I've no first-hand experience of children with autism.
Yeah, it's quite dynamic or whatever way you want. Like you could have three people that have a diagnosis of ASD and they'll be completely different, have completely different needs. The main common factor, I suppose, is social skills and social interaction and the difficulty they would have with social interaction. Have you ever heard of Asperger's, for example?
Yeah.
So Asperger's is now known as ASD, so it's all on the spectrum.
Same spectrum.
So the autistic spectrum disorder.
And what would you do to help them?
So we're working basically on a lot of social skills. So we could have a child that has a lot of difficulty with using language and using language to communicate. So you're trying to develop that. And that's through speech and language therapy and through social skills training, you know, where you're teaching them how to go and say hello to someone, how to ask them questions and find out what their interests are, and even to express their own interests and to express their own feelings. So there's that element of it. Or then you might have somebody who is what we would refer to maybe as very high functioning. So just have a little bit of a difficulty with social interaction. They might be bothered by busy rooms or loud noises and learning and teaching them how to cope with those situations. And it's the idea, I suppose, for those children is to prepare them for mainstream school and secondary. And then obviously you have some children that maybe might never get into mainstream again. And it's about trying to make their daily living, I suppose, as smooth as possible, both for themselves and for their families. A lot of care needs in certain children with ASD, and it ranges. It's very broad, and you know we have 12 kids in the unit in Lochmore, we've two classrooms, so I have six kids in a room, and the other teacher has six, and they're all so different, and they all have different needs, and it's quite hard to explain to people then, you know, well, what is autism?
I know, because it's such an umbrella.
It is, yeah, and you know who does great work actually is Adam Harris, Simon Harris's younger brother.
Oh, yeah.
So Adam actually has, it would have been diagnosed with Asperger's, and he has founded an organisation called asiam.ie, and they try and go out and advocate basically the challenges that autistic people face around the world and around Ireland, I suppose, predominantly, and he's able to explain it firsthand of what it's like to have autism. Mm. And he tells a great way of saying, like, imagine arriving on Mars and meeting an alien and you don't know whether he's going to hug you or hit you. He said, that's what it's like for someone with autism. When, you know, when I'm looking at you, I know by your gestures or by your facial expression how you're feeling or what you're going to say to me or whether you're happy or sad, whereas someone with autism can't pick up on those cues. Right. That's probably the easiest way to explain it.
Yeah. No, you've explained it very well. So I can see how then losing a match on a Sunday
doesn't really bother me as much now.
It's very, I mean, the thing about altruism of any kind is it's very rewarding for you. I'd say you get more out of it than they do.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know. But yeah, definitely. It puts things into perspective, 100%. Like, you know, obviously I still give 100% of whatever I have to give for sport. But when things don't go my way now, I don't feel sorry for myself, or I don't, you know, I'm not down. I am down about it, but I'm able to kind of put it to one side or forget about it a little bit easier and move on.
Yeah.
Because you've kind of seen all these, you've experienced different things, and you realise what it is. Like, sport is sport at the end of the day. We all love it and we all embrace it, but there's far more troubles out there.
There sure are. Will you teach for the rest of your life, do you think?
Quite a difficult question now to answer. I don't know. Is the
next 10 years?
Yeah, like, I'm not going anywhere because I do enjoy it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know where, and this is maybe the new generational thing where it would be very easy for me to say, yeah, I'm permanent job now in teaching, I'll stay teaching
good
for
pension.
The rest of my life. Good pension, yeah. But I don't know, I don't think I'll take things that way. I might teach, but I might do other things as well, you know what I mean? Yes, yeah. So I think that's the beauty of it, that you can pursue other things outside of teaching, and you know, that's what I'm doing obviously now with the gym.
Yeah, so Tipperary, All-Ireland champions, congratulations. I think that third one in 10 years probably put a stamp of greatness on the side that they needed, because two across that period for that generation, I always felt, was a bit of an underachievement. Were you feeling the same way?
Yeah, and maybe there's an element of still feeling like there was maybe one or two others that we should have won, but still delighted with any medal I've won. And there probably was that kind of thing of, you know, getting three within the decade hasn't been done since the 60s. So,
Why couldn't you do back to back? It's easy, you know, why not do eight in a row? But why couldn't
thrown out there about, you know, Tip can't do back to back, but outside of Kilkenny, like, who else has done it? You know,
but you have the talent, I think.
Yeah, well, like, every team is so talented now, and like the hurling landscape at the moment is as competitive, or probably the most competitive that I've experienced anyway. So like, when you're asking like, oh, who do you think is going to win the All-Ireland next year, like, genuinely, like, there's six or seven teams that could win, and you mightn't have always been able to say that. You might have had three, four teams max.
It was you and Kilkenny, it felt like, for a couple
maybe
of years.
Maybe at the start, the start of the decade, but other
do
teams.
Do you sense a taking of eye off the ball, even in a 1-2% way, or some shift in the years after you've won in All-Ireland? Are you looking around at times going, there's just something not in the air that was here last year?
Or maybe it's a case of actually overthinking things, like you're saying there now. You start looking around and noticing things that you probably shouldn't be noticing, and overthinking it, and maybe over trying, and being so conscious of trying to do back to back that you end up then over training and overreaching in every aspect. And I certainly think we did that in 17, where we were so conscious of that whole, you know, Tip need to do back to back.
Complacency.
It was the opposite. We trained so hard and tried to do everything so right that we ended up not being free and not actually playing the way that we can play. So it's very hard balance to find, you know. And
so this year we have to try really, really hard to be relaxed.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Try your hardest to be relaxed.
What does Sheedy bring to the equation? Like, you've seen your fair share of managers now, and you've seen, you know, someone like Eamon O'Shea seems like I'd love to watch one of his coaching sessions, for instance. And yet, you know, getting a team over the line is very difficult. What does Sheedy bring to a setup? That extra thing that he seems to bring, or is he just right man, right time, a little bit of luck involved?
I don't know. Like, it'd be unfair to say that now, but look, he brings so much. And every manager that I've played under has brought their own style. And, like, it's very hard to explain Liam's style. Like, and he's just, you know, he's very good to motivate you, and he'll always, you know, you want to play for him, and you want to do your best. You always want to try and please him. And
he's more of a delegator, I hear. More of a kind of
possibly,
head.
Yeah, possibly. But he's no,
you're,
he's not.
You're,
he's not.
You're getting tight-lipped on me now here.
No, but he's not afraid to get his hands dirty as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not as if he's you know, the puppet show like job. He's in there and he's doing every training session and he's forced in.
Okay.
You know, like saying he's a delegator maybe doesn't do him justice.
Well, it suggests his hurling knowledge isn't as razor sharp as an O'Shea or Tommy.
Well,
maybe.
Yeah. Well, like I think. You can't be everything, do you know what I mean? And maybe that's it. Maybe his awareness of, like, I need to get someone in now to give us an edge here. And, like, you know, that's maybe the way he does it. Like, as a player, you actually don't think about those things, to be honest. Like, you're actually not going, like, well, what does Liam do now? You know, no.
You're thinking of yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. You're just, like, happy to be in train and really enjoying it. And, like, he pushes it to get the best out of yourself. And you always want to perform. Like, you always want to perform your best anyway, but he just kind of has that ability to keep motivating you, keep you going.
Okay.
And you always want to do better.
Because I thought you were finished after the Munster final.
Yeah, yeah.
I just thought it was such a beating, and I thought, they're not coming back from that.
Yeah, but if you put it into perspective, which the way we looked at it was, look at the five games of Munster, and for four of them, we were, you know, people were putting us up on this pedestal, and just the fifth one, we had trained really hard throughout that, and, you know, we just had a flat performance, and... Like, when you're playing hurling, like, every team this year had a flat performance. Mm. Our flat performance was Munster final, and we recovered, and we went again. And that was the way we approached it on the Tuesday night. I can remember going back to training. It was just like, let's go again.
It wasn't panic stations.
There was no, there was no meeting, there was no crisis talks or anything like that. It was like, that was a flat performance. We know why we didn't perform.
Right.
Let's move on and get it right.
Okay.
Luckily, it worked.
So there was no big story of a round to Liam's for some Ribena and biscuits?
No.
Back on the road.
No. It was back in and train.
Yeah. There was one question I want to ask you before we go. The Club Players Association have withdrawn from this fixtures task force.
Yeah.
And they have said they see it now as a Trojan horse to ratify the status quo.
Mm.
So, I mean, I'm sure over the next couple of days we'll get more details on what they feel did or didn't happen. But certainly, I look at the Club Players Association and, you know, we're talking here about the AIB Munster final that you'll play at the weekend. So you have an insight into both camps.
Yeah.
They came on the scene about 3 years ago. And, like, don't worry, media gave them every opportunity to say, are you going to call a strike? Are you going to get really difficult here? And they, I think, behaved very well and in a measured way all the way through. And now 3 years later, they're coming out and saying, actually, what's going on here is a bit of a fraud.
Yeah.
This is just, what's going on here is they want to keep the status quo. They've done nothing for us. That's basically what they're saying here. You know, I'm one of those people who gave up on GAA because the club scene was rubbish.
Yeah.
Are you angry at this? Do you think this is out of order? Do we need to change things? Or is there any way to balance county and club, really?
I won't say I'm angry, but I was a bit surprised when I heard the news this morning. And I suppose a bit like yourself, I'm kind of looking forward to the next few days and learning a little bit more about what has gone on.
Yeah.
It is worrying, obviously, that they've decided to pull out because it tells you that the negotiations were obviously not going anyway right in terms of the CPA's point of view.
They felt they weren't being heard.
Yeah, so
which is
that's
99%
worry.
Of the players in the country.
Exactly. And, you know, like, people refer to us or people like me as intercounty players, but we're club players first and foremost. And, you know, like, that's where it starts and where it finishes. And for me, I suppose, from a club point of view, it is very frustrating currently the way the structures are, that in Tipperary alone, you play two games maybe in April, and then you don't know when your next game is.
It depends when Tip get knocked
exactly.
out.
Exactly. And it's not, you know, it's not structured enough. There's no clarity there for the club player. Mm. So you're training thinking, oh, we might be playing this time or we might be playing this weekend.
So how do you peak?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's quite difficult to keep lads motivated and keep the morale up in clubs.
If I was your club teammate and we play our two games in April, I would then just say, well, I'm not training for at least a month.
Yeah.
What's the point?
Yeah.
When can I go on holiday?
Yeah.
And it's funny, different players will come in and they'll give us different stories. Some lads will come in and say, we're not too bad in our county. It's because there's 32 different systems. And
exactly.
That
That's
needs
the difficulty.
To be centralised, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite difficult. And in you mentioned 32 counties with 32 senior teams or thereabouts in Tipperary. So imagine trying to fix games, you know, and get all those games paid off. We played, like, literally from All-Ireland final weekend, we were week on week.
Mm.
We played five weekends in a row, then had maybe 2 week break and went, like, it's been literally, say, 2 or 3 weekends off since the All-Ireland.
Right.
You know, so it is quite full on. Mm. But, like, I'd love a bit of structure and clarity. Like, you know, give the intercounty season their time, but give the club their set time and don't interfere with it.
Mm.
And if that's possible, I think that's what everyone wants. They just want clarity. I want to know when I'm playing my games, when I need to train for, and when I need to peak, as you said.
I do wonder how compatible they are. So say that, you know, you guys go in the championship, say you get whooped in the quarterfinals, or you know, you're out.
Yeah.
Well, then you'll have all the club players in Tipperary saying, well, look, they're out. Can we just bring everything forward and get playing some summer hurling?
Mm.
And then another half of them will say, well, I've holidays booked because I thought the Tip were going all the way.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you sort all that out.
Exactly.
Do you want lads sitting there with no hurling for a month?
Yeah.
Because you got knocked out unexpectedly early?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that one.
Yeah, well, like, it's better though, do you have that, or like the way it could possibly work out is you have nothing for 3 months. And at least if there was only a month of a time frame where you could possibly be idle. I mean, I think guys would deal with that a lot much better than, oh God, we could be idle here or we could be playing. Mm. I think it's just clarity, do you know what I mean? I think clarity would be better than the uncertainty that's there at the moment.
Mm.
And like, but again, I haven't researched it or delved into it enough to be actually making a formidable like proposal here or anything. But
the problem is the CPA have done that, and it seems they're not.
Yeah, I think there are five proposals put forward.
One of them has to be decent.
Surely.
I would have thought.
And I'm looking forward to actually trying to read them and see what's there. But I think it's a case of trying to just, a change needs to be made. It's as simple as that. Like, there's too many, as you said, 99% of the players are not happy, I suppose, overall with the way the system is. So it needs to change.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, great to have you in. So Munster final in Porky Rinn, I think, Sunday against Ballygunner. The very best of luck with that. And thanks so much for popping in. Brendan Maher, thanks a million.
Thanks, Joe.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.